You're listening to the J&J Innovation Podcast, where each episode is a story of people positively impacting human health through innovation.
So welcome back to the J&J Innovation Podcast. My name is Caroline Barretts, and with me today is Philippa Ngaju Mokobore. She joins me today from Uganda. She's the head of the Instrumentation Division of Uganda Industrial Research Institute and project lead of the Electronically Controlled Gravity Feed, ECGF, infusion set, which is a prototype of an automated non-invasive infusion controller designed to safely and accurately regulate life-saving IV fluids and drugs. Philippa and a team of engineers designed the ECGF to address the need for safe and accurate IV infusion therapy in resource-constrained settings, like hospitals and treatment spaces with unreliable power supply. Philippa joins us today to share her story, along with others, from the winners of the Champions of Science Africa Storytelling Challenge. So Philippa, welcome to the JJI podcast and congratulations on your win.
Thank you.
We are so excited to have you here today. And to kick things off, could you tell us your story?
So my story began when I moved back home after finishing my undergraduate education in Canada. And I started out actually in a telecommunications company, which was not exactly the field that I was interested in. I eventually left and joined a research institute, Uganda Industrial Research Institute. And there I started setting up this division, the instrumentation division, which would essentially design electronic applications that were suitable for our setting. So I think the pivotal moment was when we went into the hospitals to assess the status of medical equipment, and we discovered that there were inadequate tools to assist clinicians with diagnostic and therapeutic care. We also noticed that a lot of people could not afford essential medicines and also access to devices. So this was an area that we felt we would innovate in.
So I'd love to hear what happened before you got to the Uganda Industrial Research Institute. Where did you do undergrad? How did you fall in love with science?
So my undergraduate education was at the University of Alberta in Canada, and I did a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering. But my love for engineering started when I was quite young. I was a very inquisitive child. I liked participating in science fairs from an early age, and I used to tinker with a lot of equipment at home. So I had a natural inclination to engineering. In school, I was strong in math and physics, and my parents thought that it would be a good idea for me to pursue an engineering career. So I chose electrical engineering, and very passionate about it, especially when it comes to electronics and control systems. But the most interesting thing is I think my passion really lies in engineering for humanity, actually designing things that are useful to other people and that can potentially save lives. That is what I discovered when I started pursuing the route of innovating in the healthcare space, especially in a low-resource country like mine, Uganda.
Engineering for humanity. What does that really mean to you, and how do you see it come to life in your work?
For me, engineering for humanity means someone who would typically not be able to access a particular tool actually has access to that tool. I'll give you an example. We just finished a clinical trial in the pediatric population, and we're trying to determine the utility of our device in children. And it was quite humbling to see our device on a young child who would typically not be able to receive that particular therapy using our device. So essentially, that's what it means to me. Enabling people who are below the poverty line, and not just people below the poverty line globally, they're able to access a tool that is affordable and is appropriate for the clinical care.
And you speak so passionately about your work. Can you give us an idea of what it was like to be in that resource, that low resource setting in the children's hospital when this all started. What did it feel like? What did you see?
So I think for the people that are listening, it's important for them to understand what a hospital is like in a low resource setting. First of all, it's extremely congested. There are several beds in the ward. There are few drip stands. So we actually, our device clamps onto drip stands. So those drip stands are few. And when it comes to intravenous therapy, it's manually delivered. So a clinician has to stand and count the number of drops in order to calculate a flow rate. So it's heavily dependent on a clinician. And if you think about it, these clinicians are overworked. So you can have maybe a total of about maybe 50 children in a small ward, and you have maybe about 3 nurses. So you can see how it is a very challenging situation. And a lot of children who come to the hospital are critically ill. Unfortunately, people in low resource settings seek care when they're usually very sick. So these are usually emergency cases, and they need emergency intravenous fluids. So this is the situation that we're dealing with, and our device is able to administer patients who need emergency intravenous fluids. So this has to be obviously done carefully, because maybe a child is in shock or they're severely dehydrated, so the flow rate has to be carefully controlled. So I think people are able to now have a better appreciation of the kind of situation that we're dealing with and the potential impact that our device can have.
Absolutely. And it sounds like you have global partnerships as well. Is that true?
Yes, we do. So we do have a number of international collaborators on other projects. We have a Euro-African collaboration with universities in Europe, as well as Kenyatta University in Kenya. So we work closely with the University of Pisa in Italy, and we're developing open source medical devices on using an e-infrastructure. And that project has been extremely beneficial for us, where we're able to learn how to be compliant with medical device standards, because we're also interfacing with people from the medical device industry in Italy. So we feel that international collaborations are extremely important, but they must be carefully done and they have to be beneficial for both partners. But I feel that our collaborations, we've really benefited in that respect.
Absolutely. And your education has also been abroad as well, right? So tell me a little bit about, I believe you did your undergrad studies at the University of Alberta in Canada. How does your time there affect your work now?
That's an interesting question. I think getting an international education is really good for exposure, because we are coming from, first of all, a different setting. We're coming from Africa, from Uganda, and I'm going to, Canada. And I think when we are able to acquire these skills and excellent training, we are better equipped to solve problems, our own problems in our country. So even returning back to Uganda, obviously I'm a changed person because I've been exposed to this kind of experience. And it's also important that you're working with people from different cultures. I think multicultural collaborations are very important because you need to be able to work with people from, different backgrounds. So I think it gives you a competitive advantage, having an international education and enabling you to apply those learnings to your work in your home country.
What's next for you? How do you grow your current work and portfolio?
Yes, we still have a lot of work to do. I think one of the most pressing issues right now is to ensure that our device gets onto the market. And in order to do that, we have to pursue a CE mark, which is a European standard to standardize medical device. And the reason why we're going that route is because back home we don't have harmonized medical device standards in East Africa, and that's a very big challenge. We would also like to get FDA approval. Actually, there are some hospitals in the States that are interested in piloting our device because they're looking at the home care device sector. So we feel that this is a device that can be used anywhere in both low-resource settings as well as the developed world. So we need to fast-track the marketing and distribution of the device.
So you talked about being a young child and loving to tinker and falling in love with math and physics. How does that first passion for science come out in your work? Because it's difficult in healthcare to really, you know, tinker without thinking about clinical implications. So how does that come to life in your work today?
I think, well, there's the development that you do before you get into the hospital. So obviously that side of things, there's a lot of experimentation, there's a lot of testing and iterative design. But when it comes to designing a clinical application, I personally have had to think differently. So we have to think about the patient first. It's not just about the engineering and the functionality. We're looking at the end user and ensuring safety as well as ethics when we're testing with patients. So it has been a very interesting experience where I've had to learn good clinical practices in order to safely and ethically test our device in the hospitals. We've trained clinicians before we started our clinical trials. The most interesting thing was the feedback we got from the clinicians. They feel that it would be such a useful tool to aid in safe delivery of intravenous fluids and medication, especially for specialized care. So cancer patients, intravenous chemotherapy drugs, as well as heart patients, patients that are in the ICU as well. So we've gotten very positive feedback from the clinicians. And then the actual testing, the patients, we can see that their therapies have been carefully controlled. Alarms have been sounded in the event of any adverse event. So if the flow rate is too slow, or if it's too fast, or if there's an air bubble. So we feel that we have, at least for the first two trials, they're pretty much pilot studies, and we will do further studies to validate the device. We feel that we have achieved what we had anticipated to achieve. And we look forward to refining the device for further trials.
That's wonderful. Well, Felipe, it has been absolutely a pleasure to speak with you today. And many congratulations on your win. It sounds like ECGF has a very bright future as do you. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
The J&J Innovation Podcast is brought to you by Johnson & Johnson Innovation. For more information, you can find us at jandjinnovation.com.
Special thanks to Ryan Flynn, who was instrumental in making all of this happen, and Mike Riley, our executive sponsor.